All right, we're going to be in here by the Gemara on Mem Vav Amud Aleph. We just finished up the Mishnah, and now the Gemara is going to discuss the nature of the Mishnah. The Gemara says, Ibailuhu, Bidna Dru Plige, is the machloket that we find in the Mishnah, Bishutafim, Shidna Dru Hana'a Zemizeh? Then we have a machloket between the Tanakama, the Chachamim, and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. The machloket revolves around this issue, which is, what is the din with regard to these two individuals who restricted themselves in Hana'a? The Mishnah talks about a case of a Shutafim Shinadru, that each individual took the nether of Hana'a, implying that they basically restricted upon themselves the other party's Hana'a. So Reuven says, I will not get benefit from Shimon. And Shimon says, I won't get benefit from Reuven. So they imposed the sanctions on themselves. So now the Gemara wants to know, is the Mishnah particular about that fact, that these individuals are putting the sanctions on themselves? But, hidiru zed zemai. What happens if the sanctions are imposed by the outside party? So for instance, Reuven comes along and says, Shimon, you can't get hana from me. And Shimon comes along and says, Reuven, you can't get hana from me. So they're not imposing it upon themselves, the restriction, but they're imposing the restriction on the other party. Zemai, what's the din in that case? Mi amrinon, do we say, binadruhu deplige, the machlok between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim is only in a case where it's self-imposed, aval bidiru zed zeh modulei the Rabbon and the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, but in an instance where they impose the sanctions on the other party, there the Rabbonim would agree to the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Now, as the Ran points out, this would not fit well with the Gemara in Baba Kama. Ravina in the Gemara in Baba Kama says that the machlok in the Mishnah is about whether there is Breira or there is no Breira. Over here, the Chachamim would agree that there is Breira in a case where they are the Chiyanusim Damu, in a case where they are compelled against their will to deal with an issue. So that would not be like what the Gemara in Baba Kama says, that the machlok in the Mishnah is about Breira, because the Chachamim also agree at certain times that there is Breira, but that Breira is only in a case where you're compelled. It means that the other party compelled you into a situation where you have no choice. Then they agree with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. But in a case where it's self-imposed, there they do not grant the dispensation in order to deal with it. So in the end, what that means is that both Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim agree there's Breira. Just in a case where it was self-imposed, the nether, the Chachamim, in a sense, put on a knas or say, we're not going to allow you to utilize Breira in that instance. Whereas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov allows you to use Breira in all those instances. Odilma, afilu beidiru zedze plige Rabbonon. Even in the case where the sanctions are imposed by the other party, there the Rabbanan would also disagree and continue to have this machloket with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. It's irrespective of how the Isur Hana'ah comes about. It only has to do with the fact that there is an Isur Hana'ah over here. An Isur Hana'ah, we don't invoke Breira, and this would follow that position in the Gemara and Baba Kama, that the machloket here is whether there is Breira or no Breira. Irrespective of how the problem came about, it's only a question, is there Breira? There's no Breira. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says there is Breira. The Chachamim say no Breira, independent of how the Isur Hana'ah came about. So that's the question of the Gemara, is how exact is the Lashon of Mishnah when it says, Shinadru, that they self-impose this Isur Hana'ah on themselves? Do we take that to be literally, and therefore their machloket is limited to that case? Or do we say that that's just an example of an Isur Hana'ah, but even if it was imposed by the other party, the same din would apply? It says, Tashma. Later on in the Mishnah, it says, Haya echad mehem mudar hana'ah michaveiro. If one of the parties was restricted in hana'ah from his friend, uplige rabbonon. And over there, the rabbonon disagree. So now, as opposed to the first case in the Mishnah, which says, shenadru hana'ah, seems to imply a self-imposed restriction of hana'ah. Over there, it says he's mudar hana'ah, that he was made to be restricted in hana'ah, which sounds like an outside party caused him to be restricted in the Hana'ah. So for instance, Reuven says to Shimon, you can't get Hana'ah from me anymore. So Shimon is now the Mudar Hana'ah. He's the one restricted in getting Hana'ah from Reuven. The Madir, the one who took the nether, is Reuven. But Mudar Hana'ah, it seemingly indicates that party who is restricted was not necessarily the one who took the nether. So based on that, that example in our Mishnah, which comes up later, where it's only one of the two parties that's restricted, uses the lashon of mudar hana'ah, and over there we still see a machloket between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim, where it says snei nadur mechaveiro hana'ah. He meant it to read not mudar hana'ah, but rather nadur mechaveiro hana'ah, similar to the Nadru that is used in the beginning of the Mishnah. Now, whether the Gemara here really means to say emend it and change the word from Mudar to Nadur, or the Gemara is just saying that the word Mudar Hana'a is unclear. The Ran seems to say something along these lines, which is something that I've mentioned before. Whenever the Mishnah says someone is Mudar Hana'a, it never tells you how he is Mudar Hana'a. First, it can be Mudar Hana'a because he took a neder and therefore restricted himself, and that's why he's Mudar Hana'a. In that case, he's both the Madir and the Mudar. Other possibility is that he's the Mudar Hana'a because someone else took the neder and someone else was Madir. So the word Mudar Hana'a is not clear. It's an ambiguous term that only tells you that this person's restricted Hana'a, doesn't tell you how that restriction came about. Generally, we assume a Mudar Hana'a is someone who had it imposed by a Madir, another party. But that's not necessarily the case, and we've seen examples of that throughout the Masechta, that Mudar Hana'a does not exclusively mean that. Sometimes the Mudar Hana'a is because he himself took the neder. So whether the Gemara literally means to amend the Lashon HaMishnah, or meaning that the word Mudar is ambiguous and therefore could even mean Nadur, it's not clear here from the Gemara. The Gemara says, Zachanami Mistavro. That makes a lot of sense, Diktani Seifa. Because then that part of the Mishnah continues and says, V'kofim hanuder limkor et chalko. That we force the person who took the neder to sell his possession. Iyamart bishlama denadarhu. If you say that the person who is restricted in Hana'a, he's the one who took the neder, hainu dani kofin. Then you can compel him to sell his property to get out of this problem. Because he caused the problem. It was a self-imposed problem. He took a neder, number one. Number two is he restricted himself. And through that, he caused a problem now with his partner in the chatzer. So the whole problem is caused by himself and is resultant in him being in a position where there's a problem. So then we can compel him to sell in order to rectify the problem. Eliyamart da'adre, if you want to say here that the neder was imposed by the other party on him, amai kofinoto. Why are you going to compel him to sell his property? As the Ran says over here, then in any partnership, if you want to dissolve the partnership, the other partner will just take a neder hana'a and say, look, you're restricting getting hana'a from me. Then we'll force you to sell out your part of the partnership, and I can dissolve a partnership like that in any case. So it can't be that the person who is madir, the other party, is a beneficiary of the fact that he was madir him, and now the other party is forced to sell out his chelik in the partnership. So it's clear, based on that, the Gemara says, that the mudar, the one who is restricted in hana'a, must be also the party that took the neder, and that's why we're compelling him over here to sell his property. But in the case where it's someone else who's doing it, haminas anis, he is under duress, meaning that someone else forced him into this position. He didn't choose to be in this position. He didn't choose this outcome. And somebody else imposed it on him. So how could you be kofin? Why would you force him in that case to sell his property? So from the Gemara's conclusion over here, there are two things that come out. Number one is, we would only compel the person if they did it to themselves. If it was self-imposed, the sanctions, then we would force them to deal with it because they caused the problem. And so now we need to rectify it. And we're not just going to let them be because there's too much risk in leaving them and they will violate the neder. So in order to deal with it, we compel them to sell their portion of the partnership. On the other hand, if it's the outside party that imposed the sanction on him, the Madir, the Reuven, said to Shimon, you can't get Hana from me anymore. In that case, our Gemara is clear that we would not compel, obviously, the recipient, the Mudar over here. Shimon didn't do anything. It was imposed on him by Reuven, so we can't force him. And our Gemara seems pretty clear that even the Madir, meaning Reuven, who took the neder, also would not be compelled in this case. So our Gemara seems to indicate that there's only one instance where we're kofin, and that's where the person who took the neder is also the one who is restricted, and it's all self-imposed. On the other hand, the Rambam paskins, and the Ran quotes the Rambam over here, Rav Benu Moshe Bar Maimon Shekatav, the Madir who should kofin. Exactly what you just suggested. Why are we forcing the Mudar? Okay, we can't force the Mudar here, but the Madir, the guy who took the neder, let's force him in this case to dissolve the partnership, because he put us into this difficult predicament. He put us into a position where now this other guy is really stuck. And because he put him in this predicament, we should compel him to sell and to dissolve the partnership. The Ran says there is a difference. The Ran says that in a case where a person is madir someone else, then in that case you could say there's justification for their actions. He doesn't say what the justification is. It's a little bit of a stretch because we've seen before that the Gemara is not so happy about these nidarim. But nevertheless, the Ran says you could come up with a scenario where the person is justified in doing this. On the other hand, when it's self-imposed sanctions, there's no reason for a person to do that. Why does Shimon say to Reuven, I'm not going to get enough from you, Reuven, anymore? There's no reason for Shimon to do something. He gets no benefit out of doing that. I mean, we've seen the Gemara that they do. People do it as in a sense of spite, or they do it to show their unhappiness with the other individual. But the Ran draws a distinction to me, which I don't see as being as clear as the Ran suggests, that a person who imposes a neder on someone else could be justified or could have a reason for that, and therefore we're not going to penalize them and force them to dissolve the partnership. On the other hand, when you have a self-imposed neder, in that case we will compel you because there's no utility in such a neder, and therefore we will compel you to do it. What the Rambam clearly says is that's not the case. The Rambam says the madir, the person who took the neder, should be compelled. And as the Rambam points out, that's the din of the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi actually says that instead of it being the kofin is on the mudar, the kofin is on the madir. So the Rambam paskins like the Yerushalmi against our Gemara over here. The Raivud in the Mishnah Torah already takes issue with the Rambam and says, why did the Rambam paskin? Our Gemara does not say that. And the Ran says a similar thing over here. It's very strange that the Rambam took up the sheet of the Yerushalmi against the Bavli. Be one thing if the Bavli was neutral on this and the Yerushalmi said that. But over here, the Bavli is clear that they disagree with that position of the Yerushalmi. So if they disagree with the Yerushalmi, then why did the Rambam paskin like the Yerushalmi? And that's what the Ran says over here, that he thinks that the Rambam's wrong in paskining like the Yerushalmi over here. Now, in addition to that, the Yerushalmi says that if a person is ragil the hadir, says that if a person takes the neder a lot of times, then we will compel them to do that. So if Reuven keeps saying to Shimon, you're aser ba'anah, and he keeps causing this problem to arise, then we will compel him to sell his property. What's called ragil, here the Ran brings from the Tosefta that if it's twice, if he's done it twice already, then we say to him, it's enough, enough is enough. Either you get out of this partnership, or you matter your nether. Figure out a way to deal with this, but we can't have you keep on doing this and creating this problem over here. Now, as far as our question in the Gemara posed a question over here and wants to know, in the Mishnah, is the Machloket limited to Nadru, or is the Machloket even by Hediru? Our Gemara has no conclusion to that question. That's what the Ran says over here, V'lo Yishita Bayin. We don't have an answer to that question. E, Pligi Rabbanan Afilu B'Hediru. So he says, well, why don't we answer this from a Mishnah coming up? There's a Mishnah coming up on Daf Mem Zayin, so we'll see it in tomorrow's Daf, that Hare Alecha Cherim V'Atalai. If a person takes a nether where he makes himself restricted on the other person, and the other person restricted on him, Mutarim B'Devarim Shilolei Bavel, Basurim B'Devar Shilotoa Yir. They are mutar in things that have much more generic public utility, and there are surim in things where there is a joint public utility. So, for instance, a shul where they're both members in, then they'd be both restricted in that shul. But what you see over there is that's a neder that was imposed from the outside because the person said, I am restricted and you are restricted. So there you have both sides. He imposed a neder on himself, but he also imposed a neder on the other party. And the Mishnah says both parties are restricted. That means that that Mishnah is saying that this machloket persists even in a case of hediro. So the Ran quotes from the Rabbeinu Yonah, Teretz HaRav Rabbeinu Yonah, Dehatam Hainu Taimim Mishum Da'af Agav Dumudar Anis, Kevin Denoder Lo Anis, Shnehem Asurim. That it has to do with the nature of the neder there. As far as the person who's taking the neder, then he was restricting something on himself. Now he also imposes on the other party. So the other party is an anus, he's not an anus. So as far as he's concerned, we're going to have to impose the neder on him, and we're going to force him either to sell out of the partnership or to deal with the neder. If the Chachamim bifurcated the din and said, as far as the guy who took the nether is concerned, he has to keep the nether and he has to deal with it. But the other party who's anus doesn't have to deal with it, doesn't have to be forced into anything. He's okay, then nothing would stand. Because the guy who took the nether would say, wait a minute, I took this nether, I restricted myself and I restricted him. How come he's mutar and I'm asur? That's the same nether. And once we did that, he'd say, well, if he's mutar, I'm mutar. So in order to preserve that Isur, which is clear, the guy who took the nether is restricted because he took the nether and restricted himself. So in order to preserve that, we also have to preserve the other side of the nether. That's what the Ran says over here. The Gemara asks you a question and says, maybe Minas Anis, and the Chachamim would agree in that case. So the Ran says, from that case over there, maybe it should be a proof that the Chachamim don't worry about that. The Ran says that's not the case. The reason that we uphold the nether there, even though the other guy is Anus, is in order to maintain the totality of the nether. Because if we tell him that the other guy, Shimon, who had an imposition from Reuven put on him, if we tell him that he's not restricted by the nether, then Reuven's going to say that I'm not restricted by the nether as well. But Reuven is clearly restricted by the nether. He's not anus there. So if we bifurcate the din, then Reuven is not going to keep the nether. So for the keeping that low plug, the Rabbanan forced both parties to keep the nether in that case, even though maybe you could argue that he was anus. So the Ran says we can't prove anything from there. We don't know whether the reason the Rabbanan say it's a sur is because they still argue even in a case where it's a nus, or they really agree with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov when it's a nus, but that case is an exception to the rule because in that case the same guy imposed the neder on himself as well as on the other party. And for lo plug, they kept the neder intact for both sides. So the Ran says we can't prove anything from that Mishnah with regards to this answer, and therefore this issue is left unresolved between the Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. In the end, it won't matter so much because we know from what we discussed in the Mishnah yesterday, and we're going to see in the Gemara that we pass an halacha like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov clearly says in both cases that there is no problem in terms of using the chatzer because he can say I'm using my piece, and the other guy would say that he's using his piece. And now the Gemara moves on to an issue that's raised in the Gemara in Bava Batra, and we discussed this again. Most of today is a chazara because we discussed it when we read the Mishnah itself. But the Gemara in Bava Batra talks about a chatzer that is a courtyard that is shared by partners. Can the partners compel each other to split the chatzer? So we discussed yesterday that if the chatzer can grant arba amot al arba amot to each party, then you can compel, or one party can compel the other party to split the chatzer, or they can remain partners, whatever they so choose. If the case of the chatzer is too small to split it between them, meaning that there's not enough to give arba al arba amot to each party, then we can't compel. Neither party can compel the other party to dissolve the partnership or to force the courtyard to be split. Now the Gemara wants to know, our Mishnah, when we're talking about the Chatzer in our Mishnah, what type of Chatzer is it? So Amar Rabba, Amar Aziri, Machloket, the Machloket in the Mishnah is a case, Sheesh Bagdei Chaluka. It's a case where there's enough space to split the Chatzer. Aval, Ein Bagdei Chaluka, Dibre HaKol Mutar. But in a case where there's no way to split it, everybody will say that it is Mutar. So now, the way that the Ran explains this is, based on his Shita on the Mishnah that we saw yesterday, which is, it depends how much of the Breira is decided up front. In the case where you have Kedei Chaluka, the ability to split the property up front, then there's a huge amount of uncertainty here. Because even when you put the partnership together, or you have this joint ownership in the courtyard, there are two possible outcomes of that. One possible outcome is that you remain partners in the courtyard, and that persists. The other possible outcome is that you split, and you dissolve the partnership, and each person takes their property. So to talk about Breira in that case of Breira only is clarified at a later stage. Because at the point when you enter into the partnership, there's a lot of uncertainty in the back end as to how this is going to end up. It could end up that we remain partners, it could end up that we dissolve the partnership, because both of those are plausible outcomes. If that's the case, the feasibility of those being outcomes means that Breira is only decided later on. That's classic case of Breira. In a classic case of Breira, we say there's no Breira d'oraita. And that'll be the position of the Chachamim. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov will also obviously disagree and say that the intent of the partnership up front is to remain as a partnership. The dissolution of the partnership is just an out. That's an emergency exit. But that's not the intent of the partnership. So that will be their machloket when you can split the chatzer. But in a case where you can't split the chatzer, the breira is already determined up front. Because in the case where you can't split the chatzer, the partnership exists today. And the partnership will have to continue to exist in this manner even after today. There is no exit strategy. There's no way to get out of this partnership because there's no way to divide the chatzer. So based on that upfront, we both know, and the Ran Shita is, that each of us owns 100% of this chatzer, which is don't know when it's my turn and when it's your turn. That's the only thing that's not clarified up front. So most of the breira is already done up front. There's just a small portion of it that needs to be resolved down the road, which is, when is it my turn to keep that 100%? So that's why, in the case where Ein ba kedei chaluka, divrei hakol mutar. In the case where it is Yeshba Chaluka, then you have a machlok between Belezim and Yaakov and the Chachamim as to how to look at the options now. Belezim and Yaakov says we start out as a partnership and we intend to remain a partnership. And that's the whole view we should take here, that this is just a partnership. On the other hand, the Chachamim say, no, this is a partnership that has two outcomes. As outcome of remaining a partnership or an outcome of being split. And that possibility of being split makes it into real Breira, and we don't invoke real Breira when it's a case of De'oraita. That's the way they're explaining the Mishnah. That a case in our Mishnah, where they're arguing, is a case where the chatzer can be divided, can be subdivided. Amar le Rav Yosef, Harei Beit Knesset, the Kamish Ein Bo Kedei Chaluka. A shul is the equivalent of a property that cannot be divided. The shul is a single entity, and people fighting over the shul, you can't split the shul in half. The shul is a single entity, and therefore it's the equivalent of a chatzer, Shein Bo Din Chaluka. It's an indivisible property. Vetnan. And we have a Mishnah coming up that says, Shnehem Asurim B'davar Shel Otair. they're both restricted in things that are part of the city, like the shul of the city. They both can't enter into the shul. So you see over there that even in a case where it's an indivisible property, we have a machloket. And now as the Ran explains here, who's that opinion? According to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, you're always mutar to enter into these places. So certainly Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is not the author of that position that you can't enter into the Beit Knesset, because Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says you are mutar. And based on the way you're explaining the Gemara now, he says you're mutar when there is no way to divide it, and you're also mutar when there is a way to divide it. So it can't be Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Chachamim's position is that when it is able to be split, they say you can't enter it. When it's indivisible, then you can enter. They agree with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. That means that the shul is a case of an indivisible property, and based on that, the Chachamim would say that mutar to enter. Then who's the author of that Mishnah? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim say it's mutar to enter. We have no author of the Mishnah. So what the question that is being posed here by Rav Yosef is that, based on your explanation now, we have no author of that piece, miss that upcoming Mishnah. Ella, what do you have to say? Amar Rav Yosef, who says just the opposite. Amar Ziri, machloket she'ein ba kedei chaluka. The machlok between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim is in a case where it's an indivisible courtyard. It's a courtyard that cannot be divided. But in a case where it is divisible, everybody agrees that it's a sur. So now this is the reverse of the logic that we said before. In a case where it's divisible, now both the Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov are going to agree that since the possibility or the feasibility of dividing up the property is a possible outcome, that means that you're invoking regular Breira. Regular Breira doesn't work in issues that are Doraita, and therefore both Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim will agree that that's a case where it's a sur. In a case where it's an indivisible property, it's a chatzer that's not big enough to be divided, in that case, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says it's mutar for you to enter. Chachamim say that it's not mutar for you to enter. They're arguing about Breira. They're arguing about the ability to invoke Breira over here, but it's a different kind of Breira, as Naran already explained in the Mishnah, because here the Breira is already determined up front. It's Breira where we know there'll never be a dissolution of this partnership. This partnership will be a permanent partnership, and the partnership will always remain this way. I own 100% of the chatzer. You own 100% of the chatzer. We just have to figure out when I use it and when you use it. But that nature of that relationship will never change. And most of that fact is decided up front. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says it's not called Breira. And that's why it's mutar over here. The Chachamim say, no, that's still called Breira. And we won't allow it to go through. Now, once you've said that, the authors of the position of Beit Knesset are the Chachamim. Because the Chachamim say when it's an indivisible property, like the chatzer that cannot be divided, and like the Beit Knesset that cannot be divided, it's a sur. And therefore the Chachamim were the authors of that position coming up. And that's the way that we explained the Mishnah yesterday, that the machloket in the Mishnah is in a case of a chatzer she'ein bo kedei chaluka. That's where the machloket between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim exists. Now, the interesting question that's raised over here, the Rashba asked this question, what happens after they dissolve the partnership? Here we say that divrei kol asur, in a case where it's a divisible property, where the courtyard can be divided, and they took Nidre Hana from each other, then we say to them, they gotta divide up the property, they gotta split the courtyard. So now they split the courtyard. Once they split the courtyard, does the Easter go away? Or does the Easter remain? So the Rashba says over here, that even after they divide up the property, it still remains a sur. The reason being, because we don't allow for Breira. And here you're doing exactly that. You're creating Breira. You're saying that once we divide up a courtyard that is divisible, that means that all along, the 50% that I got, this was my 50%, and the 50% you got was your 50%, and I can't be oser your property on you, and you can't be oser my property on me. So therefore, we would say that afterwards, that there is no Isra Ana. You say that, that means you're invoking Breira. So based on that, the Rashba says that even after you divide up the property, you still remain restricted in Hana, both in your piece and the other party's piece, because the other party's piece, because he has it, your piece, because we don't know. This wasn't your piece originally. We don't know if this was yours or came from the other guy. And therefore, it remains a sur. That's what the Rashba says. Because of a Rashba Zal, Dolomi Bay Kodem Chaluka, Tasurim Elo Afilu Achar Chaluka, Nami Asurim. Even after they divide up the courtyard, they still remain Asurim. So the reason to split it was now that you can come up with a resolution by gifting or selling to a third party. Each of them can deal with their own issue and not have to worry about the other parties. That would be the reason to split it, according to the Rashba. The other hand, Avala Rambam Zal Katav, Rambam says in Mishnah Torah, Harei Elu Asurim Dekanesba Ad Shiachloku. Rambam says that the Easter only remains until they split it. Once they've split it, then Kol Echad V'Chad Nechnas L'Chalko, then each one of them is going into their property. Alma, Svirle, the Zachar Chalukah Shari. You can see from the Rambam that he believes after the division is done, that division is mutar. Now, he says, let me explain to you the reason behind the Rambam. The Rashba's claim is a very good claim. That means you're invoking Breira in an Isur Doraita. Why does it work? So why doesn't the Rambam also have that same problem that the Rashba has? So the Ran says, let me explain you why. Because in this instance, if we allow you to maintain the Isur after the division of the property, that means that I've just granted you the right to impose an Isur Hana'ah on me with my own property. That means that you have now given this other party the right to say, not only are you asur in my property, but you're also asur in your own property. And that we've said before, a person can't take a nether to be osur a third party in someone else's property. What right? You don't have any yachas over there. You have no connection to it. You're not the party to the nether, and you're also not the owner of the possession. In this instance, if we let the isur persist even after this division of the property, that means now I've granted you the right now to cause a problem for someone, even after they own the property. Now they own the property fully and wholly. And now that they own the property fully and wholly, it's their property, and it's them. And yet you're still able to make them asur b'hana'ah on that. You're stopping them from going into their own property. And that, the Ran says, is impossible. So even though it requires the invoking of Breira over here, we will allow Breira to be used, because otherwise you get to an absurdity where people can then restrict other people in other people's property. And that's not something that we want. That's not an outcome that we want. And that's why he thinks the Rambam says that. Because once you've subdivided the property, Reuven owns his piece, Shimon owns his piece. If you let the nether remain in place, that means that Shimon is restricting Reuven from going into Reuven's own property. And that's an absurd outcome. And that's why he thinks that the Rambam says that when he goes into that piece of property, it's his own property and the nether no longer holds water. All right. So now the Gemara continues. The Gemara says something now, which we discussed heavily in yesterday's daf, which is Amar Rav Huna halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, v'chein amar Rabbi Elazar halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. So here we have the Gemara paskin like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and that opened up Pandora's box, and that's what we discussed yesterday, which is that once you paskin like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that shows that we do invoke Breira in a din d'oraita, whereas we paskin like Rav Hoshaya in the Gemara in Beitza, who says that Breira only applies to dini d'rabbanan, does not apply to dini d'oraita. And we saw yesterday the response of the Rabbeinu Tam. We saw the answer of the Ri, we saw the answer of the Ramban, and then we saw the answer of the Ran to deal or to reconcile between those two different positions, and that's what we discussed yesterday in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara moves on to the next part of the Mishnah, which is Amudar Hana'ami Chaviro, Beishlosham Merchatz. So this is a case where a person is restricted in getting Hana'ah from the individual, and the individual who's restricted in getting Hana'ah from owns the bathhouse in town. Now he owns the bathhouse, he owns the olive press in town, but he's rented them out to someone else. So now who is deemed to be the owner of the property at this point in time? Is the owner of the property the renter, the leaseholder here? Or is it the balabait, the owner of the property? Who's the owner? So the Mishnah differentiated between tfisat yad and ain tfisat yad. If the maskir, if the landlord has a tfisat yad, then it remains asur. If the landlord does not have a tfisat yad, then it's mutar for this person to enter, because it's as if the landlord is not a party to this anymore. The Gemara wants to know, my tfisat yad. What is this tfisat yad we're talking about? Kama tfisat yad. What is this tfisat yad? So Amar Rav Nachman, the mechsa l'shlish u'l'revia. So he says that it's profit sharing. If the landlord still has profit sharing in this entity, whether it's for half, for a third, or a quarter, then he is a beneficiary of the population that attends or utilizes his bathhouse, or utilizes the press. So then if you go in there, and you use it, then you're getting hana'ah from this individual, because he has an ownership, he has a profit ownership in this property still. So even though he's renting it out, and the person managing it and running it is the leaseholder, the renter, nevertheless, he still, as a profit-sharing member of this property, is still considered to be an owner. And as an owner, you can't get benefit from him, and you can't enter into the bathhouse, or into the olive press. Avalba Batsirlo. Less than that would not be the case, or that could be either a question of the Gemara or it could be a statement. Avalba Batsirlo. But less than that, it's not considered to mean that once you get below a certain percentage of profit sharing, then you're no longer deemed to be an owner. You become more like a passive partner. So that's a little bit of what we just discussed before, that you might have to have a certain threshold to be considered a profit sharing partner that gives you, in a sense, ownership rights, or where someone utilizing this property is still getting benefit from you. But once you become such a small profit sharer in the property, then you are, in a sense, a passive or a limited partner where you have rights to the profits, but you're not really deemed to be an owner anymore. So that's if you read it as a statement rather than as a question. Abaye says, Afilo bebatzir asur. Even less than that is asur. Heichidami Dushari. Well, if even less than that is Asur, then when is the case that it's Mutar? The Mekabel Betasko. In a case where he does it for Tasko. So now, there are a couple of things here. There's the two problems in the Girsa. One is the word Bebatsir. Our Gemara says the word Batsir, which means less than that. Most of the Rishonim did not have that Girsa. Most of the Rishonim had the Girsa of Aval Bebeitzim. You can see that in Rashi. That's Svarim Dechtibahu Bebatsin Mashmanami Bebeitzim. Ve'it the Garsi Bebeitzim Kamo Beitzim Shel Yotzer. Yotzer Osek Kamin Beitzim Shel Chomer. He makes up the clay into these egg-shaped pieces. Memosek Deirot. And from that you make Deirot. Ve'acha Mashmanai De'it Le Tashmisha Klom. He has some right of utilization in the bathhouse. That's not considered to be tfisad yad. So what the first statement, based on that reading that Rashi says over here, which is that even though he rented out the bathhouse, he reserved the right to, say, put out his clay in the bathhouse, or reserved the right to sell some of his wares in the bathhouse. So in that case, Rav Nachman says that if he has real profit sharing in the bathhouse, that's considered to be ownership, that you can't enter into the bathhouse because you're getting enough from him. On the other hand, if he just has this concession right, that's the way the Ran describes it, that is the right to sell beitzim, eggs in the bathhouse, so he still has the right to the concession stand. Just his right to the concession stand does not mean that he's an owner of the bathhouse anymore, and you can enter the bathhouse. I mean, it makes a lot of sense, because if he's profit-sharing in the bathhouse, then he really is an owner of the bathhouse, and if you go there and you use the bathhouse, you are, in a sense, benefiting him because he's an owner, and you're also getting benefit from him because he's an owner of the bathhouse. On the other hand, if he owns the concession stand in the bathhouse, what does that have to do with going to the bathhouse? Okay, that's a benefit of setting up the concession in the bathhouse. So that's a right, or that's a benefit. But his ownership of the bathhouse has nothing to do with that. That has nothing to do with his ability to claim that he's an owner of the bathhouse. He just has the right to the concession there, or he has some other minimal right that Rashi discusses over here to place his stuff over here. That's what most of the Rishonim say is the story, and that's what Rav Nachman is suggesting. That when it's a case where your profit is directly related to the bathhouse itself, then you may not go into that bathhouse, because then you're benefiting from that party. On the other hand, if his benefits or his rights in the bathhouse are a concession stand, something not directly related to the bathhouse itself, just from the ability to use some of the space in the bathhouse, then you can enter the bathhouse because his ownership is not there. His ownership is about the concession stand, not about the bathhouse itself. Abaye, on the other hand, says, even so, even that type of residual ownership is considered to be as if you have a residual right in the bathhouse, and therefore the other party can't enter. So then when is the case that can he enter? When's the case where it's mutar to enter? The Mishnah says, if he doesn't have tfisat yad, what's the case of not tfisat yad? It says, in the kabel betasko, the case where he pays a fixed amount. Now here there's a machloket about the word taska, but the taska just simply means rent, that he pays a fixed rental payment. So that's all. The Sokar pays a fixed rental lease payment, and that's all he pays him. Owner has nothing left in this property. He doesn't have profit sharing. He doesn't have a concession stand. He has nothing except the rental income. So that's one way to explain it. And in that case, the Sokar is then the true owner. The leaseholder is the true owner. And you can enter there because the landlord has no residual ownership in it. On the other hand, others explain Taska from the word taxation. It comes from, it's a land tax, and that the person is paying the land tax on the property. So there, in a case where he's paying the land tax on the property, then the socher is deemed to be the full owner because he's paying a fixed rate for it. He's taking care of the taxes. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll explain more about that in the Ran. So now, that explanation of the Gemara would end the Gemara here. The problem is, and this is raised by the Rishonim, which is that the Gemara in Arachin and in other places tells us that the maskir has a right to abrogate the rights of the socher inside of a property. Over there, the Gemara in Erechin says that if the maskir decides he wants to be makdish the property after he rented it out to the socher, to the renter, he has a right to do so. So here the maskir, the landlord, goes ahead and is makdish the property after he rented out the place to this individual. But now the landlord just changed. It's no longer the landlord, it's no longer the guy he rented from. The ownership just shifted over to Hekdesh. So the Gemara says, no problem, this guy will pay rent to Hekdesh instead of paying it to the landlord. You just switched owners. It's as if the landlord sold it to someone else. You're just paying your rent checks to someone else. Everybody says, okay, that's really nice, but you can't do that, because when you're paying rent to Hekdesh, Hekdesh owns the property. That means it's Me'ilah, and you're Mo'el in the property by living there, because you're getting a benefit from Hekdesh, and you're not allowed to do that. So what? It doesn't matter that you're giving the rent to Hekdesh. You can't be in there, because it's owned by Hekdesh. But what you see from that is that the maskir, even though he's rented out the property fully to the socher, nevertheless, he still has residual rights in the property. And that means that he could actually kick the socher out by being makdishit, or he can ruin the lease agreement by making it into hektish. If that's the case, that means that the landlord always has residual ownership over here. And how can you make a claim that in our mission over here, that the guy's not getting enough from the landlord? The landlord has this overarching veto right in the end, which is that he can, in the end, shut out the socher, the leaseholder, by making it hektish, or by possibly taking a neder hana'ah. Because we know that konam, a neder hana'ah, functions just like hektish. If that's the case, it'll break the shibud of the socher. And in breaking the shibud of the socher, he can bump the socher out by either taking a neder or by being makdishit. So if that's the case, then the landlord still has residual ownership here. And no matter what the circumstances is, you should not be able to enter into these properties. So that's the question that's raised here by the Rishonim. Tosafot actually raised it on Mem Vav Amud Aleph. He raises it in the Mishnah itself. And over there he quotes answers both from the Rabbeinu Tam and from the Ri.
The Tosafot says,
Umeyo Yeshlit Chot, the Mayri de Adre Stama, Dena Lav Tfisat Yad, Vein Dato, Lesor Mashihiskir Avalimasar Beheja, Madse Asro.
So the Tosafot
answers the question by saying that the nature of the hektesh or the nature of the neder is different. In a case where you specify the house, the bathhouse, the press, and say that I want to be makdish that object, or you say I want to make that object osur and anah to you, in that case it would work. You would be successful at bumping out the socher, and it would work. On the other hand, when you say it's stam, if you just say stam, I'm making all my property osur b'hanah to you, then a person, when he's thinking like that, is not thinking about the property that he rented out to someone else. He doesn't view that property as being his at that point in time. And therefore, in that case, it would not be included in the Isra Hana'ah. So what the Rabbeinu Tam does, it says that the nature of your ownership is somewhat limited, which is that you can exercise that right of ownership if you directly address that object. So if you specifically say, I'm going to makdish this bayit, you can kick the socher out. If you're going to specifically take an Isra Hana'ah on this bayit on that individual, you can bump the socher out. And then if you take a generic statement of being makdish things, or a generic statement of making something a surbanah, then you don't have in mind something that you rented out to someone else. That's out of your purview. That's not what you're considering. And in that case, a stam, you would not affect it. And that's why in our Mishnah, it's okay. Because over here, he took a stam neder hana'ah. And that's why it really remains in the possession of the socher. And you can get benefit from the bathhouse because the maskir, the landlord, really has no rights left there. So that's the way that the
Tosafot
resolves this issue or resolves this stira. The Rabbeinu Tam gives a different answer, which is, Dafka Gabi Hektesh. This is something we saw earlier in the Masechta, that the Rabbeinu Tam says that Hektesh has the ability to bump a Shibud. Hektesh has the ability to knock off the Socher's rights over here, because Hektesh is something that is a sur to everyone. And so Hektesh has that power. On the other hand, by Konamot, like here, where the Konama is not a general Konama. Here you're making Konam to this specific person. It's called what's called a Konam Prati, not a Konam Klali. So Rabbeinu Tam says we're dealing with Nether or Hektesh coming from different powers. Hektesh is coming from a power where you're Osir everybody. That Hektesh has the right to override the Socher and override the Shibud of the Socher. On the other hand, in the case where you're talking about a Konam here, an Isur Nether, like in our Mishnah, the guy took an Isur Nether specifically directed against that individual. That's called a Konam Prati. Konam Prati does not have the power to override a Shibud. And that's basically what the Rabbeinu Tam says, is that the Chamim strengthened his Shibud so that the Konam Prati will not override it. And that's how the Rabbeinu Tam reconciles between that Gemara in Erachin and our Mishnah over here, which is to say the Gemara in Erachin is talking about Hektesh, which is equivalent of Konam Klali, and versus over here we're talking about a Konam Prati, and since it's a Konam Prati, it doesn't have the right or the ability to override the Shibud of the Socher. So that's the second answer given over here. The third answer that's brought, V'Chirim Tertzu, that the others answer, and this is really based on the Yerushalmi, that it makes a difference to whether you paid the rent up front or you didn't pay the rent up front. Is that if the socher prepaid for the property, then you don't have a right. The maskir has no right to bump him out. Even if he's makdishit, or even if he takes a nether, it has no impact on him because the socher is not subject to any of this because he prepaid for it. He owns it completely. He's done with the payments. On the other hand, if the socher, the renter, is paying in arrears only after the fact, then by the mere fact that Hekdesh now has a right to collect the rent from him, Hekdesh gets a handle on the property or gets a hold on the property, some hold on the property, and that allows Hektesh then to take ownership and knock out the socher because of that. So it would make a difference to me whether he prepaid for the rental. In that case, he would not have the power to override it. Versus if the socher is paying in arrears the rent, or he's paying it by month, in that case, then you could bump the socher out by making a hekdesh. And that would be the difference. The case in the Arachin is a case where he was paying on a monthly basis. Our mission is a case where he prepaid for the property, and that's why the owner has no rights left or residual rights left over here. So those are three answers brought here in the Rishonim as to reconcile that Gemara in Arachin with the Gemara over here.
And then the Ron notes that truthfully, that case in Arachin is not really a question, because the case in Arachin is talking about where he rents him a bayit stam. He says he will provide for him a house. That means that it doesn't have to be this particular house where he is in right now. And that's why, first of all, the maskir has the right to be makdish the house, because he can put this socher into another one of his properties or another one of his houses. In addition, that's the problem with the socher staying in this house, because he didn't rent this house in particular. He rented a house. Versus over here, you could argue that in our Mishnah, it's a case where he says, bayit zeh, or really, beit ha-merchatza zeh, or beit ha-bada zeh, where he specifies a specific location. And in that case, the maskir would not have the right to bump him out of the location when he has a specific house that he is renting, because then the socher has real ownership. And even though normally hekdesh is mafkia midei shibud, is only true by hekdesh mizbeach. That's only when you make it to mizbeach. But hekdesh bedak abayit does not ruin the shibud. And he says that's like Rashi. I'm passing like Rashi, not like the Rabbeinu Tam, that the only type of hekdesh that overrides the shibud is a hekdesh mizbeach, and not hekdesh bedak abayit. So Hilkach, he says, then no longer is there a question anymore. Because the Mishnah or the case in Arachin is talking about a case of Hekdesh Mizbeach. So Hekdesh Mizbeach can override the Shibud over there. So that's how the Ran resolves that problem or the Stir over here.
And therefore, the case in Arachin is not a question against our Gemara at all. Nevertheless, our Mishnah is still problematic because here we're using Konamot. Konamot are equated to Kedushat HaGuf. And since they're like Kedushat HaGuf or Kedushat Mizbeach, it should be able to override the Shibud, even in a case where it's Bayit Zeh or Beit HaMerchatza Zeh, and therefore we have to use the reconciliations that we brought above. But the Ran can't use all those reconciliations because he actually disagrees with a portion of those premises, especially those of the Rabbeinu Tam.
Vani kvar katavti b'mishnatenu, dafilu konam prati, dafilu hikdim schar socher matzi maskir lasro olav. The Ran said that I disagree with a number of these items, and therefore the Ran's going to have to go down a different path. Which is, number one, the Ran says that I think even if they prepay the rental, it's still problematic, and he mentioned that on the Mishnah. I mentioned that yesterday. Number two is, I think that even in a konam prati, even with a konam prati, you have the ability to break a shibud. I disagree with Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, who says only a konam klali has the right to break a shibud, I think even a konam prati breaks the shibud. And therefore, that maskir can ruin it for the mecher, even by taking a neder hanah against him himself. So he says, I disagree with the Rabbeinu Tam on both of those issues. And therefore, I can't use the Rabbeinu answer. I can't use his answer of the konam prati versus the konam klali, because I don't believe that's right. That's number one. Number two is, I believe that if you prepay the rent, it doesn't help you. Vacherim tirtu. And he says, I'll give you another answer about how people deal with this. Which is that hay muskarim da'ocha lav muskarim gain schirut acher da'alma. The rental over here is different than the rental in any other place. Every other place we're talking about rental, we're talking about rental income. Over here, they're talking about taska. And that's what I mentioned before. This is the land tax. The rule is that what happened in these cases was that the individual pays a tax to the original owners of the property. As long as he maintains or continues to pay that tax, then the property is his and he can be morishit. He can grant it over to his children. It permanently remains in his family. It can remain as an inheritance in the family forever, as long as he continues to pay the tax. If he stops paying the tax at any point, then it reverts back to the original owner. This is a very different type of schirut over here, because the original owner actually has no rights here. He can't revoke anything. He can't change anything, because as long as the party that's living there continues to pay the tax, then the original owner has no right. He can't revoke it. He can't stop him. He can't throw him out of the property. So that's real ownership. That type of schirut is real, real ownership. A regular socher, where you're paying rent, the landlord can decide whatever he wants to terminate the rental agreement. Or if it's for a duration, when it expires, you can kick the guy out. So over there, the landlord maintains a certain amount of ownership. So regular schirut, like the case in Arachin, over there, hekdesh is strong enough to come and bounce the guy out or cause a problem. The type of schirut that we're talking about here is this taska, which is the type of ownership where the quote unquote renter owns the property and is really the balim of the property. As long as he maintains paying this taska. As long as he pays it, he controls it. He can be morish it to his children. He can do as he pleases with it. He never has to return it to the original owner. And that's how they distinguish between them. But then the Ron in the end says, Vitimihani Alehem. The Ron in the back end says, I don't understand all of these distinctions that the Rishonim are making. Here we just gave you the Rabbeinu Tam's distinction, the Tosafot distinction, the Acherim distinction, the Shin, and then another Acherim distinction. They gave all the explanation as to the difference between the Gemara in Erechin and this Gemara over here. He says, I don't understand why they're going through all this trouble. But to me, Hani Alehem, Vishay Ani Omer La'alacha, Tafilu B'Skirut Alma, just with regular rental, Kol Shein Lo L'Madir Tfisat Yad Shari Mudar Li Tnuye. Anytime that's just rental, rather a rental, and the Mudar can get Hana'a from the Socher, whether it's a Merchatz or Beit Abab. Because even though the maskir has a right to bounce the socher out, even if the socher prepaid the case, or even in a case where whatever all the other restrictions are, he still has a right to bounce him out. That's only when he restricts the socher himself. So there, the maskir has a right to exercise that right to bounce the socher out. Osho osero tamo kol adam. Socher is included in that, or he makes it also to everybody, including the socher. So, midei shibur istalake. So, in that case, he can remove the shibur when he directs the nether at the socher, or he directs the nether at everyone. Aval over here, where the iser that he's creating is on this other party, has nothing to do with the agreement between the maskir and the socher. It's nothing to do with the lease agreement. It's not the landlord, it's not the renter. Then it has no impact on their relationship. And in that case, the socher remains the sole and only owner of that property, and that's why the guy can go in there and get hana from it. Because the maskir is not exercising that right. To make it a sur on someone else, what right does he have? As long as the maskir doesn't balance the renter out, the renter has a veto right to say to the maskir, you can't stop anybody from coming into this property. Because he's getting benefit from the renter and not from the original owner. So the Ron, in the end, gives a very, very simple explanation as to why this is different than those other cases. And that is because, yes, the maskir has the right to bounce the socher. But that right's not enough to give him ownership. That right is enough to exercise if he wants to bounce the socher. It doesn't give him then additional rights then to restrict other people on the property. Until he exercises that right to bounce the socher, he cannot now restrict third parties from entering in. As long as the socher is in place, the socher is the sole controller of the property, the leaseholder, the renter, is the sole controller, and he can make all decisions. The landlord can only exercise one right. That right is to bounce the socher out. But unless he exercises that right, he has no rights here. And since he has no rights, that's why in our Mishnah, the guy can come in and get hana. The Gemara in Erechin, that's why I made a case where the maskir is bouncing the socher. That right he does have. But that's not dealing with a third party. He has no rights with regards to third parties. And then the Ran says, based on that, in our Mishnah, when it says, Echad men ashuk ba, when an outside party comes in who's restricted in Hana'a, in the partners of the Chatzer, one of the partners restricted him, the Mishnah said that the Machloket, the Rabbanan and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov persists over there. So according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, it's a Chiddush, because even though he's not one of the two partners, he can still go in and say, I'm going into the other partner's property. So that's a Chiddush that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, even though he's not one of the parties to the Chatzer, he can still make that claim that I'm going to the other guy's property. But now what the Ran says is that this is even a Chiddush according to the Chachamim. Because according to the Rabbanon, the reason that he can restrict a partner is because he can knock out his shibud. Like the Ran explained on the Mishnah, in the way the Chachamim view it, you own 50% and you have an easement on the other 50%. So that easement, the other partner can come and hurt or affect. And that's why when it's one of the partners to the other partner, they can affect such a nether. But to someone who's an outside party, how can you affect the shibud of the other party? How can you now block out the easement of your other partner when you're taking the Iser or the Nether onto a third party? Because that's not something that is so straightforward, especially in a case from Chatzer that doesn't have Chalukah. The answer is that that's not what the Chachamim think. In the end, the Chachamim think that the partner has a Kinyan Aguf and Kinyan Peirot. He has a full ownership over here. And since he has full ownership, he has the right to be Oser, the third party. So now it's actually a Chiddush, not only going to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, but also to the Chachamim. Okay, we're going to stop here at the end of the Gemara on the bottom of Mem Vav Amud Bet.